I recently gave some talks in Indonesia. I have 3 books there which have been bestseller. So when I gave a talk in Sumatra, in Medan, 3,500 people turned up. But they knew there was many people going to come to my talk, so they had to register and sell tickets, only for $1 each. But my ticket sold out in 8 hours. Lady Gaga sold out in 2 days. So I'm more popular than Lady Gaga. So, why am I more popular than Lady Gaga? Number one, you make people laugh. So before you can open up the door of your heart, you have to open up the door of your mouth and laugh a little bit more and have some more happiness in life. You may see that, you know, as a monk, I am a little overweight, but if any of you are a little overweight, please understand this. Latest science has proved that when you laugh and when you're happy, your blood vessels expand. So if you are overweight, you have to start laughing very quickly, otherwise you will die. But if you laugh a lot, you can eat more, because all the blood mark can go through, the cholesterol can go through, and it won't give you a heart attack. So today I'm teaching you how not to have heart attack, but eat more by laughing a lot. Because that is the way that we can understand the Dhamma. Now, many times you're working in that company, and sometimes you might get disappointed. You may have a bad day. But I want to tell you my first story, not the stories in Chun Wen Chun, because you can read that afterwards. These are some new stories, which haven't been translated into Thai yet. So one day they should be translated into Thai, so we can have volume 2 of Chun Wen Chun. And once there was a king, not the king of Thailand, this was another country a long time ago, and he wanted to go hunting. Now, in those old days, they go hunting for animals in the forest. And as he was hunting in the forest, he cut his finger. The doctor was with him on the hunt. He called the doctor, "Look at my finger, it's been wounded." So the doctor looked at it and put a band-aid on the wound. And the king asked, "Is my cut going to be okay?" And the doctor replied, "Good, bad, who knows?" When they got back to the palace, the wound was red, swollen, infected. So the king asked the doctor to come again. The doctor said, "Yes, it's got worse. I will take off the band-aid, clean the finger, put on some ointment, and put a proper bandage on." And when the doctor was finished, the king asked, "Is my finger going to be all right now?" And the doctor said, "Good, bad, who knows?" That is not very reassuring. Sure enough, a few days later, the wound was so infected, the doctor had to cut it off, had to amputate the finger. And the king was so upset, he threw the doctor into prison. "So, you stupid doctor, you said, you know, you didn't know what you were doing. Look, I've lost my finger. Now I'm putting you in prison." And he asked the doctor, "What do you think about being in jail?" And the doctor said, "Being in jail? Good, bad, who knows?" He thought that was a very crazy doctor. A couple of weeks later, when the hand was okay, the king went hunting again. But this time he was following an animal and got lost. He got separated from the rest of his people and was in the forest alone. And as he was lost, he got captured by the forest people, this tribe who lived deep in the forest. They captured him because it was their holy day and they needed a sacrifice, a human sacrifice to their God. And what better sacrifice than a king? So they tied him to the tree, and a priest came out to do the ceremonies before they split his throat. They started dancing in front of him, ooh, ooh, ah, ah, ooh, ooh, ah, ah, banging the drums. And they came just to that point they would slit his throat as a sacrifice to their God, when somebody noticed, this man has only got 9 fingers. He's not perfect to give as a sacrifice to our God. Set him free. Because when you offer things, say to His Majesty the King, even when you offer things to me, it has to be perfect. I hope. So you can't offer a 9-fingered man to the God. So they set him free. And as he walked back to the palace, he realized losing a finger had saved his life. So he went to the dungeon when he got back, and he released the doctor and said, I'm terribly sorry what I did. When you kept saying good, bad, who knows, I thought you were stupid. I thought it was bad to lose a finger, but it was actually good I lost a finger. It saved my life. But I've come here to apologize to you. I should not have put you in jail. Putting you in jail was a bad thing to do. The doctor said, what do you mean, a bad thing? It was a good you put me into jail. If you hadn't put me into jail, I would have been with you on that hunt. I would have been captured too, and I've got 10 fingers. So whatever happens to you in life, please remember, is it good? Is it bad? Who knows? Suppose you get dumped by your boyfriend. Is that good? Is that bad? No, exactly. I was once dumped by my girlfriend. When I was 19, I fell in love. And after about 6 months, she dumped me. Was that good or bad? It was good! Otherwise, I would not have become a monk. So, whatever happens to you in life, no need to get upset or angry. Who knows what's going to happen next? So whatever happens today or next week, please remember that. Is this good? Is this bad? Who knows? So you don't get upset. Understanding that gives you more peace and more happiness in life. That's why these teachings of wisdom which we give to people solves a lot of problems in our life. Now you're working in a company here, and I'm sure that sometimes there's a lot of difficulties in this company. Just like any other big company, you have a lot of stress. Do you have to work hard? Really? Two years ago, I was invited to give a keynote address at the World Computer Conference in Brisbane. I don't know anything about computers, which is why I like to receive that invitation. I always like doing things which I've never done before, just to test myself out, especially giving speeches to computer experts from around the world. And one of the similes which I gave there was actually so well received, it was printed in the national newspaper in Australia, that's in Australia, and from there it went on to the Australian Stock Exchange site, where even now you can see it, how to deal with stress at the workplace. Now remember, the local economy, or the global economy, especially the share market, goes up, goes down, mostly down right now, and it's very stressful for people in that type of work. And of course, what happens in the share market also concerns companies like PTT. So it's very important to learn how to deal with the stresses of life. And this is how you deal with stress. How heavy is this glass of water? Now, when I told this simile last October, it was in Imperial College London to some students. Imperial College is a college of science and engineering. And so one smart Alex student said straight away, that's about 320 grams. I said, that is not what I meant. What I mean is the longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. If I keep holding this for another minute, my arm will start to ache. After 2 minutes, I will be in pain. After 3 minutes, I will be in agony and a very stupid monk. Contract more. What should I do when it starts getting too heavy? Just put it down. Put it down for maybe 10 seconds or 15 seconds. That's all. And after your arm is rested, you pick it up again and it feels much lighter. It actually does. If you don't believe me, you can try this at your office afterwards. What this means is stress has nothing to do with how heavy your burden is. Has nothing to do with how much work you have to perform. Stress is when it gets too heavy to bear, you don't know how to put it down to rest and relax for a few seconds. If you could only learn how to rest and relax when it's stressful, after 15 seconds, a minute, 5 minutes, if you then go back to the computer screen, you will find, number one, you have no stress. Number two, your mind is clear and rested, which means you can do more work in less time with a higher quality. Learning how to put things down and relax during your work day is just learning how to be efficient in the way you use your brain. Work, 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 keep on pushing, means that your output goes down and the quality goes down as well. In Dell Computing Company in the United States, one of the top 100 companies of the world, they have a time-out room in their offices. A suite of rooms where any worker, from the CEO to the people who clean the toilets, they can go there at any time during their work hours just to relax. It is screened so no one can receive any mobile calls, no SMSs or tweets. You go down there to rest. And the company allows everybody to do that because they know if any of their workers are stressed out, they will not be able to perform, they will make mistakes, and they will not be able to do very much work of a high quality. Which is why learning how to relax and rest is an important part of having a successful company. Which is why I teach that here, and to many business schools as well. 5 minutes or 10 minutes relaxing, you make that up afterwards by doing 3 hours work in 2 hours. And you know that. When any of you are tired, you know that your work is very difficult, takes longer to do, and the quality is not very high. So this is actually how we learn some of the great techniques of Dharma, learn how to put things down, let them go, and relax for a while. Come, samai, samai, ploy, on. And then you pick it up afterwards, and then you can be a very successful person. I am a very successful monk. You saw all of the things which I have to do, and there's more of them than you read out. There's now this Abraham Center over in Singapore, I'm the director of that, and also another one in Indonesia, and another Buddhist fellowship in Indonesia, which I'm spiritual. Advisor for, so there's many, many duties which I have to do. But it's very, very easy because I only do one thing at a time. A busy person is someone who does 3 or 4 things at the same time, which means nothing gets done well. One thing at a time, do it well, then go on to the next thing. And if somebody interrupts you while you're doing something busy, train yourself to say, you know, crap, crap, or can't, yes, yes, yes. But it totally ignore them. In other words, that's why you have two ears. One to go in, one to go out. So you can always listen to them, but just do what you need to do. And that way you can have a very successful career in the office. But some of you will be managers. If you're not managers yet, one day you will be. And in business, sometimes you have to tell a subordinate they are not doing their job properly. It's called performance assessment. And often we don't know how to do that. We get angry at people. And when you get angry at your subordinate, they get very upset with you, which means the relationship which creates a harmonious workforce is broken. There is a Buddhist way of giving performance assessment at work. And if your managers don't know how to do this, please let them know. It's called the sandwich method. The sandwich is two pieces of bread with a filling in between. The sandwich method is, if you have an employee who say coming in late, first of all you praise them. You say, you're such a good worker, your work is of a very high standard, you're always well presented, we love you in this office, you're a great person, but... And then you tell them, but you keep coming in too late. But you know, you've got such good qualifications, and you know, your people like you here, and you're very, very good workers, so you finish off with the other slice of bread, which is more praise. So the sandwich method is praising the people many times, then doing the criticism, and then doing the praise. If you do that, it means that the person who is being criticized knows they're being respected, they're being valued, and that when they do hear the criticism, their ears and mind are open, they will hear it, they will realize that they are criticizing you, not because you're a bad worker, but just part of your work is not up to standard. You're more likely to accept that, and the person finishes off with praising you again. That way, the relationship between your boss and the employee is maintained, a very good harmonious relationship, and also you do hear the criticism and you will do something about it. That is how we, in modern business, using sandwich method, to tell one of the employees they're not doing this part of their work correctly, but they basically they're good people. That way you keep people, and also the people will change and will grow in the company. So you see, these are little wise ways of talking to each other. Now, there are some people in our world, because we're always criticized, sometimes we feel we lose our self-esteem. There's a lot of people. I was just interviewed by someone from the Bangkok Post, and she said that was her big problem. She's lost her self-esteem. And the reason is because people always criticize her and very rarely praise her. It's always Ninda. Might be some of her. And that may be in your office as well. And later on, maybe in your relationship with your boyfriend, girlfriend, in your marriage. Your husband always criticizing you. The wife always criticizing the husband. That means that the relationship will eventually break down. It's very strange, but psychologists have proved what I know as a monk. If you are going to praise your wife, it takes 15 seconds before it enters her mind. You have to keep praising her. Darling, you're so beautiful. You're a wonderful wife. I'm so lucky to have married you. You're so beautiful. You're very good with the accounts. You're very kind with the children. Such a great 15 seconds yet. No, carry on a bit more. Because only after 15 seconds will a woman accept the praise. But you criticize her. you know, you're stupid. Straight away it goes in. Why is that? Whether it's in Merkad or Merkad, we are so used to accepting criticism, we are not used to accepting praise. It was mentioned in the introduction in 2004, I was awarded a very important honour in Australia. This John Curtin Medal, only given to one Australian every year for community service by a very big university in Australia. When I went up to receive my award, I had to give a speech. And I gave this speech. I said, I'm not sure why you gave this medal to me, because there's many other people in Australia who do much more work for the community than I do. And anyway, I would not have been able to do all this work without all these people helping me. But thank you anyway. The next year, I went to somebody else's award ceremony. This was a doctor in one of the main teaching hospitals in Perth. He was the head of the oncology department, treating cancer. And he was a great professor, but he had noticed that people in this hospital were getting the best treatment in surgery, in chemotherapy and radiation therapy. But when they were leaving the hospital, they weren't getting any compassion, money matter. So he decided to set up a center within the hospital where any patient who was being treated for any cancer could go at no cost and receive alternative therapies like Chinese medicine, acupuncture, foot massage, Reiki, anything they could receive there. Even though many of these treatments had no scientific basis in Australia, and his fellow professors thought he was going crazy, he wasn't being scientific anymore, he went ahead and did this, knowing that it does not matter if foot massage works. The very fact that somebody is being kind to you for 30 minutes and spending time with you after you've had some chemotherapy, that would help. The power of compassion is very strong. And, of course, the results of this alternative therapy were so good. The cure rates of cancer were improved significantly. And because of that, he was awarded this medal. When I heard that, I thought, that man is a hero. He's actually saved so many lives and also lessened so many people's suffering when they're being treated with cancer. But when he received his medal, he said in his speech, I'm not sure why you gave this to me. There are many people in Australia who are doing much more work than I am, and I could not have achieved this except with the help of all the other people supporting me. And I said, that was my speech last year. And from that experience, I realized that man deserved his medal. And I started to think, maybe I deserve my medal as well. And of course, I did. And I wondered, why is it when these very, very powerful and intelligent people decide that you deserve a medal and you say you don't? Actually, you do. So from that time on, when anybody told me that was a very, very good speech, Ajahn Brahm, thank you, I say, yes, it was. Whenever anyone praises me, I receive it. I don't just brush it off. So, can you do the same? When anyone said that was such a kind thing which you did, you should say, yes, it was, thank you, I deserve that. Never think that you will get a big head if you receive praise. You don't get a big head, you get a big heart. You become kinder and more wanting to serve other people. So please, when your husband says to you, "Oh, you look beautiful today, darling," please tell him, "Yes, I do. You're very wise, husband." That way, we have more praise in our family and also in our office, in our workplace, which means our motivation goes up, we feel appreciated, and we will work harder as a result. If all you ever get is criticism, you will find you're getting depressed and you won't want to try. So any managers here, please this afternoon, go to your workers and tell them what great workers they are and how you appreciate them and how lucky you are as a manager having worker like you. Wow, I must have made some very good karma in the past to get you as my secretary and my worker. Try that out. It works. Try that out with your husband. When you go home tonight, darling, you know, I've just been thinking all day. You're such an amazing man, and I'm so lucky that you chose me. You're a great guy. And then you can ask for that sort of new dress or to go out somewhere. Praise gets you a long way. Of course it does, because you like it. What it does, it opens up people's hearts. Criticism closes people's hearts and causes a lot of depression in our world. Now, your children. How often do you praise your children? And how often do you criticize them? Your room is not tidy. Your grades at school are not good enough. You have to work harder and stop playing so many computer games. If that's all your children hear, what are they going to turn out like? As parents, as many times as you criticize them, please praise them twice as much. Find some way of praising them. And then they'll accept the criticism, for they know that mum and dad really love them. For example, if your child comes in the top 5% or bottom 5% at school, they are not good Buddhists. If your kid comes in the top 5% or bottom 5%, they are not good Buddhists. Because in Buddhism, we believe in middle way. Tang Saigla, middle somewhere. That's very good Buddhism. I was a school teacher for 1 year. And at the end of that year, I had to give out report cards. There were 30 children in my class. One of those children came bottom. Even if they were all Einsteins, one of those Einsteins would have to come 30th. But when he found out he'd come bottom of the class, I looked at him, his head went down, his shoulder drooped. He was showing all the signs of depression and also fear. He would have to take that result to his parents that evening. And imagine what it's like taking a report to your parents. You've come bottom of the class. That's scary. Now all of the children, they knew I was a Buddhist. So I decided to go up to that child and be kind to him. I told him something more about Buddhism. There is something in Buddhism called a bodhisattva, prabodhisattva. And a bodhisattva is someone who sacrifices their own happiness for the sake of others. They don't care about themselves. They just don't want their friends to be unhappy. And I say, that's you. You have deliberately on purpose chosen to become bottom of the class this year, so none of your friends have to take such a report to their parents. You are so kind. All your friends are selfish. They henge dua. You henge con earn. You are such a wonderful boy, and I am going to propose you to the headmaster that you are Bodhisattva of the year in this school. And even though he came bottom, I made him laugh. He thought I was a very crazy school teacher. But I had to add in the end, in that school, you're only allowed to get Bodhisattva prize once. Next year, then want somebody else come bottom. See, in that way, even coming bottom of the class, you didn't need to suffer at all. So teaching in that way, you can turn any situation into something where you don't suffer, where you are happy. And also, over, this is what I heard from Lokpo Cha, because he was my teacher for many years. And please excuse me, but Lokpo Cha, also Lokta Mahabua, they would always use like words which everybody could understand. I know that sometimes people think that monks must always choose very high language, a very polite language, but that was not the case in the East. Ajahn Chah would always use the word ki. No ki. So, he said the story. Actually, I expanded the story. Like when you go home from the office tonight, on the way, you tread in the kima, and you get the kima all over your shoes. As a Buddhist, what should you do? As a Buddhist, you must take the kima home with you. Don't scrape it off. Until you get home, and then scrape it off under the mango tree at the back of your house or close by. And if you scrape off the kima under the mango tree, next year your mangoes will be sweeter than ever before. But when you eat that mango and all the juice runs down your cheek, please remember what you're really eating. It's kima. It's dog shit. Transformed into beautiful mango juice. Now the meaning of that story is when something bad happens to you in life. You get a cancer, someone close to you dies, you lose your job or something else happens. Remember, it's kima. Kima. Dog shit. And it's smelly, it's difficult to bear. Remember all the difficulties and suffering you experience in life. You know, your boyfriend going out with your best friend. You know, your boss promoting someone else or not you. Somebody dying in the family. If something terrible happens to you, remember what that's just kima. And what you should do with it is always take it home and dig it under the mango tree, and 1 year later you will be wiser and kinder. That is the reason why we have suffering and disappointment in life. And then, whatever happens to you in life, it is good, bad? Who knows? Very good. Okay, so that's the 45 minutes.